Earlier this week, producer Kelly Moffitt sat down with a distinguished local architect who you may know as the designer of the so-called Flying Saucer building on Grand Boulevard. His name is Dick Henme. At 93 years old, the retired Japanese-American architect has designed and renovated many iconic hotels and buildings in St. Louis. But the winding story behind what brought him to St. Louis goes back much farther. His journey started in 1942 when his family was forced from their home in California to live in a Japanese internment camp.
I was born in Fresno, California, which is a good place to be from. My parents had a grocery store there, and the family consisted of my father and mother, and grandmother, and my younger brother, Ed, who was 2 years younger than I was. At that time, I was 17 years old. I was attending Fresno State College. That was the first semester. And I went to church on December 7th, 1941. And I went home after church, and I heard this announcement on the radio about the bombing and the attack on Pearl Harbor. I didn't know what to make out of it, so I walked over to our grocery store. My parents used to work 7 days a week at the store. Anyway, I went there and wanted to discuss with them what this meant. They, of course, didn't know anything about it. So anyway, things developed from there. We lived in what was considered the west side of Fresno, which was sort of the area where a lot of Oriental people lived. This developed into the evacuation of the people of the Japanese ancestry in the whole West Coast, California, Oregon, and Washington. As it pertained to us, we were given approximately 1 week to gather our things and get ready to move out. And we could only take what we could carry. Pets, cars, houses, all those things, we had to get rid of it. There was no way we can take it. After a week, we were put into military buses, and we were taken over to what was considered the temporary evacuation center, which turned out to be the Fresno County Fairgrounds. The funny thing was that I used to go to the fair every year. I used to love to make model airplanes, so I used to take the airplanes to the fair to exhibit them, and I used to get a lot of ribbons and trophies. You know, I enjoyed doing that. And ironically, now this became our, you might say, our concentration center. They had built wooden tar paper shacks, buildings. Each building had six units, enough for six families. Each family had a space 20 by 20, one light bulb in the middle of the space, two windows, one door, no partitions. The floor was just wood boards. If you wanted privacy, you had to hang sheets or whatever to separate the men from the women. Toilets and showers were in a central building, single building. And some of these buildings were like 200 feet away from where you lived. We had a mess hall where everybody went there for dinner. The meals were not exactly fancy. Usually it was beef or pork, but you didn't get the meat. All the help was provided by the people that were interned. Doctors, teachers, nurses, all these people were considered professionals, and they were paid $16 a month. Skilled workers, like sign painters, I was a sign painter, carpenters, people did some of the skilled work, were paid $12 a month. And unskilled workers, that shovels or farming or whatever, were paid $8 a month. There was no particular entertainment or whatever, but they got together, the younger kids, teenagers got together and put together a dancing and whatever in the paved areas. We used to have jitterbugging, whatever, back in those days. And And that's how I learned how to jitterbug.
Do you remember how you felt during this?
Well, I guess I was 17 years old, and I don't think I was too involved with the politics at that point. Still pretty young to really understand everything that was going on. But then after we were there, we found out that we were able to transfer to an inland school if we got accepted. I was 17, and I was going to Fresno State College. That was my first semester there. And I applied to an inland school, which was the University of Colorado, in Boulder, Colorado. And a friend of Ted and I were both accepted, so we decided to apply for entrance to the school and leave the center. We were able to leave. So that was about 3 months after we were initially put into the center. Incidentally, the centers were ringed with barbed wire, and they had soldiers with rifles that were guards. So you were not permitted to leave the center at all. After Ted and I left the camp, we went to Boulder, and we were there in August, and the school didn't start till September. We found out that the Navy V-12 training was going on at the University of Colorado, and this meant that possibly the Navy might not appreciate our attending school there because of our Japanese ancestry. The administration had no problems with our attending school, but they said they don't know what the Navy would say. So then we decided to look elsewhere, and that's how we found Washington University in St. Louis. So we decided to leave Colorado, and we ended up in St. Louis.
Had you heard something about WashU, that it was more accepting? What made that seem like it was a safer bet?
Well, we didn't know too much about it, but there were certain schools that were accepting students from Japanese ancestry. There weren't a lot of them, so you couldn't be too choosy about it. So anyway, we got on a train and ended up at Union Station downtown. And a fellow named Arnold Hawk, who was the Campus Y director at that time, came to greet us, a very nice man. Anyway, he took us to the campus, and we found quarters at the dormitory. There are all told about 15 students at Washington U. At that time, I was studying engineering. Because of my love for model airplanes, I thought I might become an aeronautical engineer. But then I found out that that wasn't exactly the kind of designing that I would be doing. Designing airplanes model-wise was totally different from the actual full-scale airplanes. So I decided to look at some other areas. So in the junior year, I transferred into architecture and started architectural school. There were several Japanese Americans studying architecture, and they were all very excellent designers. Gio Obata was one. There was Kimano and Fred Taguchi, who ended up to be my brother-in-law. I enjoyed the school and it turned into studied architecture. And then in 1942 is when I went to St. Louis, and that was September 1942. In 1943, they drafted me into the Army. So I passed the physical, and I was waiting to be activated. I reported, but they didn't know what to do with me. Because I was Japanese ancestry, they didn't have a place to put me in the Army at that time. So they put me in the reserves and put me back, and I was back into school again. And then in 1945 is when they activated me, and I had to go into the Army. I had to go into the basic training at Camp Livingston, Louisiana. And after I was finished with basic training, just about then the shooting war was finished. That's right after the atomic bomb was dropped. But then prior to that, I had applied for Officer Candidate School I took an examination, I passed it, and they accepted me for training at Officer Candidate School at Fort Benning, Georgia. So anyway, I got on a train and went to Fort Benning, Georgia, and became a second lieutenant. They sent me to Fort McClellan in Alabama to become cadre. My cadre is when you're teaching the other recruits how to become a soldier. And then after about a month, they sent me to Fort Camp Pickett, Virginia, where they're going to ship me overseas. And then they assigned 50 men and 1,400 German prisoners to take back to Germany.
From prisoner of war camps in the United States?
They were in prison in the United States. And these particular German soldiers were from the Afrika Corps. They were in Romney's was the general over them, and they were kept in the States. So they gave me 1,400 prisoners to put into a ship and take them back to Germany. Well, I have 50 men to guard them, but they wanted to go home, so there's no problem, really. So they were in the hold of the ship, and I didn't see them at all the way across the ocean. So we finally got to Le Havre, France, where they unloaded the prisoners. And then we had to wait for a train to take them into Germany. And the trains were what they call 40 and 8s. It's 40 men or 8 horses. These were boxcars, actually. And it took them almost a month before we got the train. So we finally got it, and we took them into Germany. And I dropped them off at a small town called Bad Aibling, Germany, where they scattered from there back to their homes. I was assigned to what they call a railway security MP outfit in Munich, and I was there for about 11 months, and I was another month in Salzburg, Austria. Eventually, I came back to the States, and I left the Army at that point. And I had school, one semester left, so I went back to Washington U to complete my training. And then I went to work.
At that time, had the rest of your family been released?
My father, mother, and brother were in Jerome, Arkansas, was the camp where they were moved to from Fresno Assembly Center. And my brother was also there. After a while, they were permitted to leave if they were able to find a place to live and work. My father and mother and brother moved to St. Louis under the auspices of Mrs. Thomas Salmon. The Salmon family used to have a soap company. They had a very nice mansion on Lindell. In the back of the property was a carriage house with an apartment above it. And that's where my mother and father and brother lived, and I also moved in there. My father did chauffeuring and maintained the gardens, and my mother did dressmaking for Mrs. Salmon. My mother was a very excellent seamstress, and my brother went to Soldine High School. So that was the situation, and I lived there until I went into the Army.
Did you experience, when you were at Wash U or when you were moving to Colorado and then to Wash U and then into the military, any discrimination or prejudice based on your Japanese ancestry, even outside of the camps?
Surprisingly, very little. And actually, I was surprised in St. Louis, hardly any. People here were very nice to us. I experienced no discrimination that I could recall. California, that was another story.
Have you ever returned back to Fresno?
Briefly. I go to California, San Francisco, every year. My kids live there.
Have you ever returned to the county fairgrounds to where you were interned?
No. That doesn't appeal to me.
When you look back on that time, what would you hope people learn from that part of American history?
I can't speak for, you know, the people who are not Japanese American, but I think, you know, we learned a lot. I think people you deal with, work with, learn with, study with, treat you pretty much the same way you treat them. And I think that the way you deal with them, I think, has a lot to do with how happy your life can be. Once in a while, you run into people who are difficult to deal with. But then, you know, I think those you don't have to deal with if you don't want to. And I think that whatever nationality, background, I think it's how you deal with them. I found that this to be true not only in the States, but in Germany, where I spent a year, in other areas where in my work I traveled quite a bit. I was able to go to Buenos Aires, Rio, Beijing, Japan, not very much. And I think people are, the way you treat them, the way you accept them, has a lot to do with how they treat you. And I think that's, to me, very, very important.
That was producer Kelly Moffitt speaking with Dick Henme, a renowned St. Louis architect who you may know as the designer of the former Del Taco building on Grand Boulevard. He was one of more than 110,000 Japanese Americans forced to leave their homes on the West Coast in 1942 to be interned in camps across the country under stark conditions. Sunday, February 19th, marks the 75th anniversary of the executive order that cleared the path for such internment camps during World War II. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Stephanie Lecce.